Welcome to the Everything Coworking Podcast, where you learn what you need to know about how the world wants to work. And now your host, coworking space owner and trend expert, Jamie Russo.
Welcome to the Everything Coworking Podcast, episode number 27. This podcast is brought to you by the Global Workspace Association. Today, I talked to Keith Warner, managing partner of the South Bay locations for Pacific Workplaces. Pacific Workplaces has 15 shared workspace locations in the Bay Area. While Keith has been in the industry for 30 years, he and his team at Pacific Workplaces, or PAC, as they call themselves sometimes, are market watchers. They stay on pace with what today's workplace consumer is looking for. And they've done a few things recently that Keith and I talk through, including a brand name change, a title change for their member-facing staff, and experimentation with co-working. For anyone operating a more traditional business center looking to make some updates, this is a great episode for you. Keith, thanks so much for joining me today. I appreciate you taking the time, and I'm really looking forward to our conversation. We are actually both.
Thanks for having me, Jamie.
Yeah, totally. I was just thinking, usually when I interview people, they're someplace far away, but you are probably not very far away today. Should have come over.
Exactly. You know, we're probably 20 minutes by freeway, I guess.
I know, exactly. I've never done an in-person interview, though, so I don't know. So Keith is the managing partner for Pacific Workplaces in the South Bay, which is in Silicon Valley, just south of Palo Alto. And Keith, you manage how many locations?
Directly under me is three locations in Silicon Valley. I have Cupertino, where I'm sitting today, Sunnyvale, and downtown San Jose.
Okay. And Pacific Workplaces overall has 15 locations. Is that right?
15, yes, in California and Nevada now.
Okay. And when was the first location opened?
Well, that's a little bit of a tricky question. Nope. We Pacific Workplaces is officially, the official start date's about 2003, but there's a few centers that were kind of incorporated or merged in that have been under operation for many years. In fact, a couple of them, 30 years, have been in operation. In fact, the one I'm sitting in, the Cupertino location, was started by my dad 30 years ago under a different name. We were actually called American Executive Center, not to be confused with the good folks in Philadelphia, Mike and Ryan and Ann. But my brother Jeff and I ran American Executive Center here in Silicon Valley for many years. And then in 2008, we actually merged with Pacific Workplaces with Laurent and Scott and Tracy and Becky. And so, Pacific Workplaces just has a few centers like that that have been, Jeff and I actually brought two centers in to the mix, and there's a few more that have been kind of acquired and incorporated into the Pacific Workplaces brand throughout the years.
Got it. Yeah. So I'm going to mention, actually, your brother sent me yesterday, and this has been posted kind of all over the social media channels. There was an academic paper that just came out called Coworking, a Transdisciplinary Overview, which sounds sort of fancy, but it's a pretty approachable document. And I will include a link to that in the show notes. But it has a neat timeline in it. Usually the timelines we see in the co-working world sort of start in 2005, which is when co-working started, and this one went back really nicely. So in 1959 was the first business incubator, and then serviced offices, so like, you know, executive suites, started in 1978. So is not a new thing, and you guys have been at it for a while.
Right. And, you know, 1985 being our first location here in Silicon Valley. And I came on a year later in 86. So, listening to your podcast, you have so many fantastic guests that have done so many interesting things. And 6 months ago, they were doing this, or last year it was this. And then they, you know, started a co-working center or did this or that. And I've essentially been doing, you know, the same thing for 30 years. Now, but I think we've learned how to evolve and kind of, you know, make some of the changes that are necessary to kind of stay on top throughout all those years.
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons why I wanted to have you as a guest, because I think Pacific Workplace is just kind of a great model for someone who, or for a company that's kind of looking at the landscape and looking for what's next and how to make sure they're kind of staying on top of that and being appealing to the next generation of people looking for flexible workspace. And this paper that I mentioned kind of talks about how co-working and serviced office space are starting to merge and look, you know, more similar than not. You know, even though I think a lot of people think there are a lot of differences there, we're starting to see that hybrid model come out. So I wanted to ask you a few questions about what Pacific Workplaces is doing to kind of move, you know, kind of into today's shared workspace environment. So starting with, which we didn't mention yet, you recently changed your name from Pacific Business Centers to Pacific Workplaces. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, that's a good question. And it's been almost 2 years now, the change from Pacific Business Centers to Pacific Workplaces. But even before that, as I mentioned, Jeff and I were running American Executive Center here in Silicon Valley. And even if you track it back to the trade association, back then was ESN, or the Executive Suite Network. A lot of people don't remember that one, but before it was the Executive Suite Association, it was the Executive Suite Network. And so that word executive, whether it be in our trade association or many of our names, as in American Executive Center, really kind of fit the type of client we had. You know, you walk down our halls, it was filled with attorneys, you know, in three-piece suits walking around. You know, 90% of the occupants there wore a tie, and whether it was attorneys or sales executives with Kodak or 3M or GE. And so it really fit kind of the environment and sort of how we started. And then as the association moved from that name to OBCAI, which is a mouthful, the Office Business Center Association International, was right about the time Jeff and I merged with Pacific Business Centers. So we went from having executive in the name to business centers, and that's really kind of what the trade association did as well. And it kind of fit. Things got a little more casual, you know, with software developers, and you know, some of the ties came off, and just was a little more casual place to work and place to be. And then lo and behold, down the road, as the association made the decision to change to GWA, the Global Workspace Association, to kind of incorporate all the different ways people work. So did we. We felt like there were so many people, the millennials as well as others, that wouldn't even think about coming to a place that was labeled a business center. You know, that was just too formal, and they wanted the more casual. But also, you know, they weren't there to just, you know, walk into an office and shut the door and work there all day. It was about the open area, the meeting rooms, the community. And so we changed it to Pacific Workplaces to really kind of incorporate that idea that there's many type of ways people like to work. I mentioned meeting rooms, open space, co-working, of course the offices still. But the word workplace also incorporates the idea of community. It's more than just the space, it's the workplace. And that place includes the community of people you get to know every day and you rub shoulders with and you go out to lunch with and you do things after work with. And so it just kind of fit with how things were going in the industry, and so we kind of rolled with it.
Do you see other business centers in the industry making a name change like that? Is anybody else sort of done something similar?
You know, that's a good question. I don't really see a lot of companies, none really come to mind, making that change. I think you would see it in new names, you know, that are started. Of course, co-working spaces just have so many great creative names. And so, that probably was some of the influence that we had as well, looking at the co-working space, names and going with something along that line. But, yeah, I think maybe the new ones coming up will probably incorporate that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, making a brand change is certainly a pretty big undertaking. So
yeah.
You also recently changed, and I didn't realize that your name change was almost 2 years ago. Time flies.
Yes, it does.
I think this is a little bit more recent. You changed the title of your client or member-facing staff. Can you talk a little bit about that change as well?
Yeah, and it really, again, comes from the influence of the co-working spaces. We try to stay on top of the trends and what co-working spaces are doing. We attend Juicy each year and love that, and Liz and all she's doing there, and try to incorporate a lot of those great ideas. And it just didn't make sense to have the title be center manager and receptionist that had been for so many years. So we went with the change to community manager, and community coordinator is the front desk person. We were actively trying to encourage our managers to foster community in their space, having more events, of course, getting involved in connecting member to member, that kind of thing. And so it just didn't make sense to, or it made more sense, I'll say, to actually change their title along with it. So it really helped drive the point home to the person we were actually trying to encouraged to foster this community that, by the way, your title is actually changing too. And it really helped. Everybody really got on board. And like I said, it's not just about the number of events that we started having. It was social media, getting all of our staff more involved in social media. And then that member-to-member connected learning about the company, seeing, hey, Joe, I noticed that, you do this. And did you know Steve is also in that field? I think you guys ought to talk to each other. Maybe you could work together and kind of being that connector as well in the space. So
what do you think the biggest challenge was in that shift for your staff?
Oh, I think just that they're so busy with what is really important stuff, mm-hmm. Sending out invoices.
Right.
We want to get paid.
Managing mail.
On time. Mail, sorting mail.
Visitors,
yeah. Conference room reservations. We have some centers that book over 1,000 hours a month of,
wow.
of meetings.
Yeah.
And so just trying to take that time to be involved with the members, to help create that community. They all certainly wanted to do it, and you tell somebody, hey, we want you to have more food and more events, and there's sure they're all on board,
right.
with that. It's just finding the time for it. I think there's a couple of centers though where the we'll talk more. I think we're going to get into some space changes and what we've done with co-working, but there's a couple of centers where when the center manager's title was changed, they also lost their office.
Oh, nice.
So
okay.
they became the community manager, and they were kind of thrust out into the middle of the community. They just had an open desk. And if you would walk into the space and kind of look around the open area, it would be kind of, indistinguishable between who's the manager,
yep.
and who the members are.
Yep.
And so that was a bit of a shock.
Yeah, that's a cultural shift. So
yeah.
I think, I just want to make one quick comment on this, which is I think this is an interesting sort of point to be made at this particular time in the industry where co-working spaces so business centers have been around for a long time and have figured out operationally sort of what's economically sustainable and important. And some of those things are meeting room revenue and, virtual mail revenue. And, centers can do very well in those areas and certainly go above and beyond what's possible to do with space. And so your managers are really busy handling those things. And then co-working spaces, some of them are so focused on the community aspect of that they don't have the resources or are not using their resources to focus on some of those other revenue generating aspects, which can be challenging because then they don't have the sustainability that they need to support the community. So we see some of those struggles, you know, some people were, who, you know, get in the co-working Google group or whatever, who are sharing some of those things. And I think that's a real opportunity for sort of the two sides to come together and figure out, like, you know, what's the right balance there and how do you optimize that? How do you create a sort of more community-focused atmosphere that's still economically sustainable?
Right. And a lot of that community type of activity is not at least immediately recognizable as revenue generating.
Right.
You know, we know it ultimately leads to happier members that stay longer and who recommend the space, and that means you have more members and it eventually gets down to more revenue, but it's hard to see that at the beginning. And so yeah, it's a good point.
So let's talk about your experimentation with co-working memberships. Your spaces have been more traditionally office focused, but you've done some experimentation in a couple locations. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, it's been pretty interesting, and I'd say it's even moved on from the experimental phase to that it's definitely working. My three centers in the Silicon Valley have done made some varying changes, and it actually makes probably for the listener it's probably good if I go through each one because the success that I've had in adding co-working to these, you know, so-called traditional business centers is really kind of directly proportional to the risk that I was willing to take or that I decided to take in each center. So if you take, for example, the San Jose center, so we had a kind of an extra wide hallway and kind of in the back of the space, it's interior, really unused. We were able to put in some nice, you know, open desks, height adjustable, electric, you know, thing, kind of cool desk and some casual seating. But really the only risk I took there was the cost of the furniture. You know, I didn't take out any offices or, you know, take down any walls or anything. And the success there has been kind of marginal. There's, you know, a handful of coworkers, a handful of members there. And you know, we can say we have co-working. We have that option if that's, you know, what people want and it's the right location for them. There's not a lot of community going on. Although I would say that traditional business centers, they do have community.
Mm-hmm. You know, just yes, because, I think that's a total myth that people are sort of walking around like avoiding eye contact, right?
Right. They may go in their offices, you know, private offices for hours at a time. Mm-hmm. But they do come out for coffee and, you know, have lunch and talk to people. So there's definitely community there. But, you know, then if we move over to the Cupertino Center, which is, you know, Apple's headquarters, Cupertino, vibrant, you know, busy center, the risk we took there is actually taking out a wall between two exterior nice window offices. So you basically, you know, it's a center that pretty much stays full. And so you're risking the opportunity cost of that revenue there, those nice window offices. And it was just something that I felt like we had to do to, you know, as I saw how the world was changing with co-working becoming more and more popular, that there's something we needed to do there. But all we did is take out a wall between two regular offices, you know, minimal cost, construction costs of the wall and carpeting, and you know, it took off pretty well. There's probably 20 co-working members there. Now, there was some ramp up time, so there was definitely time where we would have gotten more in revenue if it was if it was an office than the co-working members. And now it's probably, you know, a little bit more revenue from the co-working members. You know, you can sell more memberships than you have seats, so we're a little bit over that. But the nice thing is when you had it as the two offices, when you did have a vacancy, you know, it would go a month or maybe 2 months at times before you released it. So you'd go from, you know, nice revenue down to zero for a month while you're releasing, then you'd go back up. With the co-working, you just, you know, you're going to lose a few, gain a few. You're never going to go down to zero.
Yeah.
So that's kind of a nice thing about that. But it really, you know, it's, if you walk in there, it's what you'd call, you know, kind of like a library. It's there. I don't see a whole lot of interaction between the co-working members. And I think part of that is because it's kind of away from the lobby, the business lounge. There's just two doors into that area because it used to be those two offices. But it's been okay. You know, it's been a good, we've added that service. We can say we have it and it's been good. But if you move to now to our Sunnyvale Center, the risk we took there is we got in a rent renewal with our landlord, we got some TI dollars and you know, we got about $75,000 and not a lot. It's a pretty tight market in Silicon Valley. You don't get a lot from landlords.
Yeah.
But that $75,000 could have easily been well used throughout the entire 15,000 square feet to spruce up, you know, the look of the entire space. But instead, we took that and devoted it really to this one area where we again, it was two exterior offices, but they were right across from the business lounge. And we took out the wall between the two exterior offices and the long hallway wall for those two offices. And because it was right across from the business lounge, we were able to take out a few other walls there into our admin areas, open that up, create a much nicer business lounge. That's one of the places, one of the centers where the manager there, the community manager now, is just in the open area. So that office went away. So it just became a much more open feel. We put in the co-working, some benching and then some lower seats, and then also some that we call dedicated desks that people can pay a little more for, and that's always theirs, much like you have over at InnerSpace. And that's been great. And there's now 15 to 20 co-working members. Revenue to revenue, if you compared from when it was two exterior window offices, maybe a little more, maybe a push, but it's added so much more to the center. Mm-hmm. The vibe, it's right there where everybody, whether you're a co-working member or not, you see it. You know, it's where everybody kind of congregates. It's created a space for us to have events and mixers. It's really been good for the center, not just for the co-working. You know, we like to, you know, always look at, as we were talking a little bit before, at the, okay, what revenue did this bring? I made this change, and now how much revenue do I have, or what revenue of this versus if it was an office? And I don't think you can always do that. And this is a definite case where it helped the entire center. Even the full-time office members are benefiting from this co-working space. So it's been good.
Well, I love the way you laid that out. It's perfect, and I think a really great example for anybody thinking about making a move. To your point, the results can really be, you know, correlated to the risk that you take, and not necessarily the expense, but the risk, and where, you know, and also just really key where you locate it. So if you're using sort of this extra space in a hallway in the back of the space, you know, those two spaces could have been similar. You could use the same furniture and that kind of thing, but just mm-hmm. co-locating next to the lounge and more near an entrance, I would guess, you know, one of the benefits you get is on tours. It's like that perceived benefit, like when, you know, people may not use that space, but just sort of knowing it's there. Mm-hmm. And I think these days this idea is, you know, you guys use this term a lot, workspace as a service, that you're not just, you know, going to use a desk, but you're getting more out of the space. And part of that is this ability, if you want to interact with other people and sort of make those connections. So
yeah, right. And we're really seeing that in that Sunnyvale space. We're seeing, you know, people interacting and seeing that community and seeing, you know, people from one company or, you know, a freelancer from one company, you know, working with another company. Yeah. So we're just seeing that that serendipity or that, that interaction. And it's nice, no matter where you are in that area, you just, you know, kind of look around and see who's there and who's not. And if it were down the hall, it's kind of like you wouldn't know, you know, who's in the space and who isn't. So,
yeah. So, you know, you talked about this last one was an example of, you know, lease was up, you got a little bit of TI, nothing to write home about, but you use that TI to, you know, make a pretty major shift in that one area. So how will you approach the layout of new spaces as you have more of an opportunity to update?
Yeah, I think that Sunnyvale model is really the one that we would go with. If the economics and we can get what we need from the landlord and the space lays out just right, probably even more so open it up even more. We're pretty much filled up on the co-working space now. So, you know, if we could add more desks, we would. Who knows? Maybe we just kind of go down the line and keep taking out a couple more walls at a time. But, I think that's probably the model we would use going forward.
What do you think the shared workspace landscape will look like in the next 5 years? Will we be able to tell the difference between co-working spaces and business centers?
You know, that's a good question. As you know, they are kind of converging. Mm-hmm. All the time when I talk to you about InnerSpace and visit you over there, you're like, oh, I wish I had more full-time offices.
I know.
I could lease them all day long, right?
Yeah.
Palo Alto. And then you talk to the traditional business center operators and they're contemplating doing what I did, is taking down some walls and adding more open space. So I think that's going to continue to sort of meet in the middle. I think you'll still probably be able to tell the difference, you know, a bit. There'll still be a place for traditional business centers. I mean, they'll survive. I think they're missing out on the, just having that other way that people love to work now. And that becomes a pipeline into their other services. For example, you know, I'm sure at InnerSpace there, probably a lot of the people that take your full-time offices are ones that were previously coworkers. And that's the case with us as well. They move from one service, whether it be up or down, throughout, you know, from coworking to virtual office to full-time office or back down the other way. So
yeah, so it can expand the life cycle. Yeah, we definitely see that both ways, to your point. So it's a neat, and you know, it's funny, I was listening to you kind of describe each space, and you just have a lot of you sort of more excitement in your voice over what's going on in Sunnyvale and talking about you know, some events and mixers that you're able to do there. And I think somebody made a comment recently about the sort of the co-working model with private offices and some folks who have been really passionate about sort of all open plan moving more to the mixed model. And they said, you know, putting in private offices makes this model sustainable and allows me to do what I'm really passionate about, which is, mm-hmm. you know, the open workspace and the community building. And I think that's kind of a neat part of it is, you know, we're probably all in this because we're passionate about people and we love people and, you know, whether we've called it community or whatever we've called it, that's kind of, you know, why you're in the business. And so to open that up and put more focus on it and be able to interact with the local community a little bit more can make the job just more fun.
Right, for sure. And, you know, we just kind of touched on different, life cycle or product line of the center. We didn't talk too much about virtual offices mm-hmm. and how, you know, our centers are thriving so much with the virtual office plans. It's sort of like, you know, when a coworker, well, you know, this is good to bring up too, because a lot of our coworking members will get a virtual office plan as well. And we'll do some discounts if they, you know, bundle the two together. Virtual office being more important if they need to, you know, have a bundle of meeting room hours along with it. They're getting their mail there. Maybe they want us to answer their phones, have that professional feel of personalized phone answering, and then have a bundle of hours. Whereas the co-working, of course, is just in the open, but many times we have people come to us and say, well, that's great. I do work, you know, most of the time out in the open, but I do have client meetings as well, and so I need to use the meeting room. And we show them the virtual office, and they say, well, yeah, I don't really fit in either one. I kind of need both. And so we do some discounts for putting those together. And Pacific Workplaces just went over, with our 15 locations, just went over 2,100 companies on our virtual office plans. And Silicon Valley is certainly kind of leading that charge with a 200 to 300 at each center. So,
yeah, the virtual office piece, I think, is really interesting. I think we're going to see a tipping point on that, where that also becomes a lot more mainstream. I feel like that's sort of like co-working been one of those options that just a lot of people don't know about. And, you know, with that being marketed more, even, you know, I don't know that that's what WeWork does, but WeWork has their like business lounge, you know, membership. It's like $45 a month. This idea that, right, you could have like a light membership where you, you know, right, sort of bundle in exactly what you need, even if it's not a full-time office space. And right. I think the virtual mail piece, and I, you know, maybe I'll talk you into coming back on to talk about that, because I've done another episode on that. And I think, you know, co-working spaces still don't experiment with that as much as they could and realize the opportunity there. I mean, 2,100 companies across 15 locations is amazing. It's a good upside potential there.
And I'll just throw this out as an interesting way. I was thinking about this the other day. It's an interesting way to put it. There's a lot of ways to describe, you know, whether it be the number of companies or the revenue that we bring in on virtual office plans. But if you have you know, primarily operators listening to this, here's a way I can put it. In my three Silicon Valley centers, I can pretty much pay my rent to the landlord with my virtual office revenue. So
yeah. I think that would surprise a lot of people. Totally. Yeah, exactly. It's a good way to sleep at night. And those are just kind of like the co-working piece. You know, you lose some, but you get some, and you can grow that kind of consistently if you're putting the effort toward it, but it's never going to go to zero tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, I think so. Since this podcast is brought to us by the Global Workspace Association, I thought I'd sneak in this last question. You've been a longtime active member of the GWA. What would you tell someone that's considering a membership?
Well, I mean, right off, I'd just say join. You know, I've been a continuous member for 30 years now and never regretted it. Of course, the big draw is the conference, and that's filled with great educational content. And there's some awesome associate members there that are like vendors to our industry that you get to rub shoulders with at the conference and learn about new products and services that they're tailoring specifically to the shared workspace industry. So that's awesome. But I think the benefits go really way beyond the conference. But it sort of starts at the conference. It's the people you meet at the conference. But they become your resources throughout the year. These are people that you can bounce ideas off of, you can go to for advice throughout the year. And, you know, the conference is filled with great educational material, but it's many times it's, you know, like Juicy as well. It's the conversations you have in the hallway or at the restaurant that night or at the event or lunch. And things you learn about how other operators are doing things, and the ideas you bring back, and so it's that. It's, you know, some great educational webinars, but it's really about the people. They're very helpful and they're fun. They're just fun people.
Yeah, sometimes you get to see them do some karaoke.
That is true.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much for your time today and for sharing your experiences with your shifting approach to shared workspace. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. It's been fun. Thanks
awesome.
For having me.
We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of Everything Coworking. Be sure to click the subscribe button so you can stay up to date on the latest trends and how-tos. Until next time.